All right, well, welcome to the second episode of the EcclesiaNet podcast. My name is Tatisan, and I'm here with John Chandler. And John, I'll let you say hi.
Hi.
All right, excellent. And we are here with Clay Carver and Leslie Webster, who are two of the pastors at Horizon Church in the Maryland area. You guys are all over the place, right, in Maryland? Or?
Oh, we're in Owings Mills, Maryland, near Baltimore.
Okay. So is that, are you in one location right now?
Yeah, we are. We, several years ago, church planted out of us in another Baltimore suburb.
Okay.
We're just kind of siblings right now, I guess.
So you're like friends-ish.
Pretty much.
Nice. Nice. Well, we're going to talk with them for a little bit. And really, our hope with the podcast is almost to simulate getting together over a cup of coffee or with some folks in the Ecclesia Network. Fine tobacco product or something like that, but we're gonna, it's like kind of morning, so, or early afternoon, so we're gonna just go with the coffee and the internet here. But so just a conversation between leaders and talking about what's going on with you guys. So why don't we start with you guys, just, I mean, a short introduction of who you are. Clay will make you go first, and your role with the church, and what you guys do.
Okay, well, yeah, so I'm Clay Carver, and I'm on staff with Horizon. That means that sometimes I speak on Sundays. I lead a small group. I connect with the other small group leaders, and just if I need to resource them in any way or let them vent or whatever. And leadership training, connecting with other pastors, helping set up on Sunday morning. It's not like a head pastor role. It's just very much a support role for the link group leaders.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm Leslie Webster. I'm also on staff with Horizon. Yeah, pretty much everything he said, we kind of duplicate each other. We try to work together as much as possible. It's maybe less efficient, but we really like the outcome. And we kind of do anything from, we're the only two staff Horizon has, so we kind of do anything from like your basic secretary stuff to publication to the pastor type duties, et cetera. We share as much as we can with our small group leaders, but we're the ones released to have more time available during the week.
And now, are you both full time?
Yeah.
Ish.
Pretty much.
Ish.
We get paid 70% of what a local teacher makes.
Okay.
So that's a strong ish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good.
As long as you didn't say we get paid sometimes, then that would
happen. Well, and that happens to you.
Sometimes we don't make the paycheck. Yeah, we do little things on the side to kind of supplement when we can.
Okay, so you guys are the only two staff, and are you? I'm guessing your small group leaders or key leaders. Like, what role do they play in the whole thing?
I mean, it's team leadership across the board. All of our small groups, we try to have at least two small group leaders per small group. Team leadership throughout. So Leslie and I model team leadership. Each of the link group leaders model team leadership. It gets us ready and equips us for multiplication, accountability, all that kind of stuff. And so in terms of decision-making and all that kind of stuff, really, we're just small group leaders, just like they are. It's like a it's a church of small groups, and all the small group leaders make decisions together. And we do that unanimously. Whenever there's a decision to make, we stick with it until we can come to unanimous consent, and then we move forward.
So basically, you guys are all equals. You guys just happen to be the ones set aside to get more time than everybody else.
Exactly.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice. How many different groups do you have?
Seven small groups.
Okay.
Six
small groups. Sorry.
It fluctuates a little bit, but it generally is in the around 6 to 7, 8 at the most.
Okay. I mean, since we're on small groups, like, what you guys are a kind of a church of small groups, and it sounds like that, and I think that's the language you used. What role, like, what do those groups look like? Like, so if I were to be part of one, what does my life in one of those small groups look like? And then also in connection to the larger group of small groups, how does my life look in connection to that too, if that makes sense?
Okay. Well, each of our small groups is very different from each other. So you basically, if you're coming into our church new, you're probably going to want to try out a few different groups and just kind of see if one feels like a better fit to you or not, because each of our small groups are based on the people and the personalities and the circumstances of that group. I mean, the basic, I guess, trajectory of the group is to encourage each other to continue to follow Christ and to lead others to follow Christ. So whatever tools are helpful for that, might spend some time in Bible study, some time in discussion, some time in sharing a meal together, some time in kind of service activities amongst the group or outside of the group, worship together, prayer together. I mean, just pretty much anything you can think of. The goal, I guess, is to kind of become enveloped in each other's lives to the extent that we're able to actually know each other well enough to share the stuff that you don't share with, you know, just anybody. And then when you can are able to confront stuff, you're able to change stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. The early on in the formation of Horizon, Streams of Living Water, you know, was influential for us. It was a big deal.
You mean the book?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Richard Foster, Streams of Living Water.
Yeah.
And I came out of an evangelical, I came from a Southern Baptist tradition, and I was kind of frustrated with that tradition. After reading that book, I saw, you know, the beauty in that tradition. Same with, you know, I was kind of wigged out by some charismatic stuff, but I saw the beauty in that tradition. And really, I think each of our small groups has the freedom. We don't anticipate that any of the groups will, you know, fully express Christ in all those different traditions, but each of them, I think, do tend to take on kind of a different flavor, you know, a different stream a little bit, depending on the strengths and the abilities of the small group leaders.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome.
Can you say more about how the church came about this way? I mean, is this the structure you set out to have from the start, or has it been a ongoing change from the original intent?
Well, one thing that was a big deal to us when we first started was we saw ourselves laying out like the bones of a church. We didn't, like other church planters would ask, like, how did you get people to buy into your vision? And we never saw this as our vision. We saw our vision was to start a church of teams, where a group of people came together and the church would emerge out of the strengths, you know, of those people, of just the capacities of those people. And it would be limited based on the limitations of those people, you know? And so Horizon has evolved based on grab hold of an idea that really resonates with us and means a lot to us and has been beneficial in our lives. And it kind of starts to become our part of our DNA. And depending on, you know, it's a fairly transient neighborhood. And so when we started Towson or when people move away and other people move in, we've definitely seen different different aspects of our church change a great deal. And that was always a part of our vision. We never saw a particular, like this is the way our church will always be.
Originally, it got started with Clay and a guy, Dave, that came up from New Orleans just to plant a church out here. They met up with, you know, a few people that were also Christian and interested, and they started a small group together. And eventually that kind of grew into Cold. They got to know more people. You know, that multiplied into two groups. And eventually it got to the point where, like, you couldn't fit everybody into, you know, one house. So that's when they decided to start doing your weekly Sunday service kind of thing as a way to kind of still stay connected with everybody. So it kind of, that's kind of where it started and evolved from there. Small groups earlier on, everybody was like young, 20s, single. So everybody had all kinds of time. so there was all kinds of connecting going on outside of your like official weekly meeting. As everybody's kind of gotten a little bit older, some married, some kids, that kind of thing. So we're in a kind of a spot where we're trying to figure out how do we, like, we've grown just kind of unexpectedly, sort of, to really value the deep level of relationship and accountability. So figuring out how to maintain that when lives are getting more and more busy and scattered with extended family and other obligations, career, that kind of thing, is kind of our current challenge.
Yeah, that was going to be my question is, you know, how do kids, and I'm guessing, I mean, up here in Philly it's a pretty fast-paced, scattered, fragmented life, and I'm assuming down in Baltimore, it's probably worse, if not this, you know, at least the same, but probably a bit more fragmented. Like, that's got to be a fairly significant challenge, especially the kids piece and all that, right?
Yeah, definitely. We've done really well, we feel like, with Sunday mornings. We've latched on to something that, like, each of our small groups takes 1 month in a rotation to hang out with our kids on Sunday mornings and hang out together as a group and kind of guide them during the adult service. So that what's great about that is that our entire church rotates through our kids program. So it's on their level. It's appropriate for them. And it's great. Like, they have a lot of fun. The adults end up having fun with it, even the ones that are skittish at the beginning. And, you know, after the service is officially over, they come in, the kids come into the adult theater and they're running all over the place, like playing hide and seek with, you know, adults that have been in there before, that kind of thing. They invite the adults to their birthday parties because that's their friend, you know, like, they don't. So that's been really cool how much the kids have really become a part of the church. And you see that really well on Sunday morning. We're still a little bit of a loss though with small groups. Like, it works out really well if there happens to be one family that has a kid, then the small group can meet at their house and kid can go to bed for school, kind of thing.
Right.
But when you have multiple families with multiple kids that have to get in bed at a certain time, we haven't really figured that one out yet.
Yeah, that's complicated. But so obviously, to kind of go a little bit of a rabbit trail, you guys have these small groups and you meet on Sunday mornings as a whole. Is it every week?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
It is, okay. Yeah.
Awesome.
And the small groups meet just midweek, weeknights?
Yeah, right now most of them meet Tuesdays, a few of them on Wednesday. And right now all of those are every week. Some of them are rotating, like in terms of the whole kid deal, some of the groups have started, like, they'll come together for, like, everybody will hang out 1 week, and that's a very casual week. They're eating together. All the families are together. And then on the other week, like, all the guys will get together and they'll have the kids, and all the girls will get together without the kids. And then, like, the 2 weeks later, they'll do that again, and the ladies have the kids and the guys don't. And during that time, there's more accountability, prayer, deeper conversation taking place when you don't have the kids. So we're experimenting with some of that kind of alternating different activities, different weeks, in order to have some – instead of every week – having a casual time and a more intimate time, making 1 week more casual and the next week more intimate.
Yeah. That's interesting. So make sure I follow. So you have what you're kind of saying. So some groups, they'll do like a whole group together, very cash dinner. The kids are there with the adults having a good time. And then the guys meet, and then the women meet on the opposite weeks, and the other guy, they watch.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Right. Just a lot of them will split up in a house, upstairs, downstairs kind of thing, or in a different house in the neighborhood, that kind of thing. Yeah.
You know, in all of my playing around with small group ideas and listening to people, that's probably the first time I've heard that kind of approach, which I think I really like that. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was one of our small group leaders and small groups that just came up with it and decided to give it a try.
That's cool. Now, is that across the board, or is that some groups do that and other groups have different rhythms?
Right, the second. There's one group that does that. There's another group that's starting to experiment doing the same thing.
Okay.
There's a third group that is also doing sort of a similar thing, but actually the family, it's a link group leader that has a kid in that group, and they choose to have a babysitter. So they're actually, I guess, every week that they split up guys and girls, it's just adults.
And then the other group, like my group only has two kids, 8 and 5. They hang out with us, they eat, and when they get bored, they go upstairs and watch TV. So that, you know, we don't have any other kids in our group. So it just depends on the needs of the group.
Yeah. So how with the leadership structure you have, which I love, I mean, I'd love, actually, I'm going to ask two questions. So let
John
me start
approves,
with
by
this
the way.
One. Yeah. No, I'm going to start with the first question, which will lead into the question I actually want to get to. But just for a little more backstory, Leslie, at what point did you move into the role that you're in?
Okay. I moved out to the area right about the time that they started having weekly Sunday morning services. And then I found them a few months after that. I had met a girl out here that was looking for churches. She found the church and asked me to go with her. And I went once and never looked back. So I just kind of came into the church, just looking to be a part of a church. And, you know, through that, I mean, I'd grown up in church and see my parents involved and that kind of thing. So I just started helping out and getting involved. And, it grew to the point where I was sort of doing my teaching job full time and stuff for Horizon full time, whether it was meeting with people or helping organize finances or et cetera. And about that time is when we started the church in Towson, another Baltimore suburb. And so we sent Dave, the guy that came out with Clay, over there along with most of our leadership. Especially the ones that had really been around for a long time. I was a small group leader at that time. And, so it just kind of, there was a void there. Cause we do think team leadership is very important. And I don't know, it just kind of stars aligned, I guess. And it seemed like a natural, like I was definitely at the point where I'd been investing so much time in both teaching and Horizon that one of them had to go. Like I couldn't keep investing that much time both places.
Well, I'll tell you what, the reason Leslie came on staff is that, you know, as you said, most of the leadership left, and I'm looking at the church that we have here and looking for, you know, who kind of embodies Horizon. And one thing that Leslie, one thing I always noticed about Leslie was, you know, like say in the worship service, right? Like after the service is over, like I've been speaking or whatever. And you know how people like always want to come and talk to you afterward, and it's never the people that you want to talk to. Like people that come and talk to you are
talking about.
Right. So they're the ones that like you could talk to anytime, and they just want to come tell you, oh, I did a great job, and I like this, or, you know, like who cares that you like that? Like what matters is like how are you, you know, like there are people that are just kind of like on the fringes that you want to get to that you just can't get to because, you know, these people that want to come. They really don't need you at that moment. Anyway, I'm trying to make my way to them. And then like you know, several times, Leslie's already there. Leslie was just always attentive to the people who are getting lost in the shuffle. And that's kind of been the model for what we've looked for in leadership. Like one thing, different capacities when it came to, you know, how much they knew about the Bible or how much they knew about, you know, theological issues or whatever. All of our leaders, I feel like, are very sharp, like very aware of their surroundings, aware of what's happening, and they tend to find ways to be helpful in the moment. And that's what we look for in our small groups. And I thought Leslie really embodied that. And so when I was at a spot where I was kind of alone, like looking for like who do I need to lead with, Leslie made a lot of sense. And it was also cool, like, her being female, her being single, me being a guy and me being married, there was a lot of, you know, we do a lot of the same things, but obviously we have the capacity to do them with different chunks of people at our church.
Yeah.
And that's been awesome. Like it's like we're able to spread ourselves out and function, you know, like I call it the cult of Leslie. They're like these, like these single girls. No way that I could really connect with like she does, you know? That I think sometimes almost get like in a church that typically has mostly male leadership, like I grew up in, they almost kind of get marginalized in a sense, you know, or there's like some levels between them and what they perceive to be the leaders of the church. So, I was really excited for Leslie to come on staff for all those reasons.
What's been great about working together is that we pretty much from the get-go always agree on where we want to go, but very rarely agreed on how to get there.
Yeah.
So all of the pushback and just the struggle to figure out how to agree on how to get there has been really beneficial for us and for the church. You always end up, you know, the more you have to struggle through something, the better idea you end up with in the end.
Yeah.
Which is a lot easier to say now than when you're in the midst of the process, right?
Yeah.
That kind of points towards the second question I wanted to ask you. You know, Clay, I remember you, maybe the first or second time I met you, you talked about how your church kind of exists as a confederacy of small groups.
Yeah, very much.
And I love that term, you know, but so thinking about, you know, as you were talking earlier about one of your small groups came up with this alternative structure, you know, to change their rhythm and that kind of thing. Can you talk a little bit, and maybe you can give a specific example, and maybe there isn't one that's appropriate to share in this context, but can you talk a little bit just about what a decision-making process looks like when there's, you know, if a small group is got a wild hair to go off in some other direction, you know, how do you sort through that and process that as a community?
Yeah. Okay. So the primary deal, I think the overriding thing that makes it work is that we all have a high degree of respect and trust among each other. I really, when I was telling you earlier about, you know, like those skill sets and those people, they're just amazing. Like, I've got the leaders at our church, in any given issue, I'm definitely not the one to go to. Like, they're just a lot more capable than I am at a wide range of things. And I think most of the leaders kind of have that sense about the other leaders. Like, they're just really sharp. And so if one of the leaders has an idea that's different, the first assumption is that's probably going to be a good idea, you know?
And the rest of us are there excited to hear what they're thinking and how it's going, that kind of thing.
So that's the first, just to start, the first assumption that wild hair probably has some good underpinnings or some origin there. The other deal is we've given each other the right, like if any one of the link group leaders says, I really don't feel comfortable with where we're going, the rest of us stop. Like, we just wait and we pray about it some more. And some really good things have come out of that. We've seen like where all but one leader felt comfortable moving forward because we thought it was kind of a small deal. We were talking about church membership at the time. And this one young lady, really young, one of the younger link group leaders, her dad had been involved with starting churches. And she said, I always felt like growing up, when we got to the point that we started having membership, something about the church kind of died. And she said, I never felt comfortable with it. And, you know, some of us were like, oh, you know, it's not going to be a big deal at Horizon. We don't really see. And she just wasn't comfortable. So we just stopped and we prayed about it for a month. We came back the next month. And as we were talking about it, we realized we don't really care that people are members of Horizon. We care that people are a part of their small group. And so that really defined, that was a moment of defining what it meant to be a part of Horizon. And it happened because one lady, one young girl really, just said, I don't feel comfortable yet. And she didn't really have an alternative answer at all formed. And everybody else was like, that's good enough, we'll wait. And I was so proud of her, like, to be,
yeah.
I mean, there was like a guy in that group that definitely, a guy that actually I think was moving forward the fastest towards membership. He could have been her dad, and he was just kind of like a strong personality, you know? So for her to stand up to say that, and then for everybody else to think, oh yeah, her opinion matters just as much as this other guy. That to me was one of my most proud moments. And I always think about that whenever we have any kind of disagreement at all. That's our ideal, is that people can just say, I'm just not ready yet. And we're cool with that, you know?
Huh. Yeah.
Did that answer your question? I don't know.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Okay.
There's a deep level of trust in that I, you know, being a part of churches for a long time, I mean, in our congregation right now, in our leadership team, there's a deep level of trust, but it's been formed by a lot of hardship. But, you know, is that the case for you guys? Like, how have you guys learned that trust in that community that you guys have there?
Well, I'll tell you, when I was in seminary, the one thing that I learned at seminary that ticked me off more than anything else that I was ever taught was wherever you go, you should look for other pastors to be friends with, because ultimately, your church members, you can't truly be vulnerable with the people in your church, because, you know, they're the ones that, like, if they find out something about you that you're, you know, that they consider, you know, not good enough or whatever, they can fire you. Like, your family's income is on the line, and it could be on the line over something that's just you being human, but they don't want you to be human over it. And I thought, this is ridiculous. Like, so I'm supposed to be the pastor and I don't get to be a part of the church, you know? So the very first, like, I would much rather Horizon die than not have that kind of trust. You know, it's not worth it being a part of a church if we can't do that. So that's our first, that was right off the bat. Like, we won't be a part of it if we can't do that, you know?
Yeah.
Because you're not really, you really aren't a part of it if you can't do that, if you don't have that kind of trust. So assuming that to begin with, like, that's the way things should be. And if there's something about you that you're judgmental in some way that keeps that from happening, you're like a total scar on the church. Like, you're totally crushing the church, and you don't belong in leadership at all, you know?
Well, and this, I mean, we've seen this really extend to most of our entire church, like outside of leadership. Obviously the amount of accountability and comfort level changes with the depth of relationship, but it hasn't been a problem. Very, very rarely for anybody to find out anything about somebody and not like care about them and be compassionate. And, we haven't had, like, I don't know, I guess, I mean, I can think of less than a handful of people over the last 10 years that have come in and would use things against people if possible. And we right. root that out as soon as possible. Whoever is, you know, most involved in their lives, like, you know, conversation after conversation, because that is the most dangerous thing to community.
Right.
It can't happen if it's not a safe place.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's the big deal for us. You know, it has to be a safe place.
And because that's so important to us, we're hyper vigilant and aware of little things that aren't a big deal yet. And if we're able to take care of that, then I don't know, the rest is, it works out okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That's what I was going to ask, is you probably have found yourselves in situations where you've had to, you know, exercise that hyper vigilante type.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it can be kind of awkward because you're like, you see things before the people right. who are really good at seeing these things see them before they're obvious to everyone else, you know? Mm-hmm. So the leaders are like, dude, this guy's really making me uncomfortable in my linker, but I've already seen him crushing a conversation. And so I'm like, okay, well, we got to talk to him. Like, we have to make sure he understands, like, you know, how hard it was to build that kind of environment. And it's the environment. The reason he wants to be in your small group is because, you know, people have that kind of trust and have that kind of. So usually when you talk to people, they're just not thinking, you know, they're just not.
Right.
They don't realize that that's a problem. And so we assume that, you know, you don't just assume that somebody's trying to be a jerk. So anyway, and you know what's really cool is whatever ideas we had about, like, this is important about Horizon, God totally blessed us with a core group of, like, the people who are the most influential at Horizon are the people who are most passionate about this. So, like, it just makes it a lot easier when there's total, like, you're just not going to get a different answer from a different link group leader about the importance of, you know, that kind of safety, so.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, we do try to, as much as we're able to kind of encourage, I don't know how to say this, encourage influence of this, these type of high quality people and high quality leaders, like point other people to, like, hey, I really appreciate about this person, or when we have people speak on Sunday mornings, or, you right. know, any opportunity where somebody could gain influence, we try to make sure that person has the character to, that we feel comfortable with them having that degree of influence. Just because somebody happens to be skilled at a certain thing, if their character isn't, if we're not comfortable with that, then it's not okay for them to lead out in that. They can maybe partner with somebody else, but we need the people that are in the most influential positions to be ones worthy of wielding that influence.
I've known you for a while. And Leslie, yeah. I think shortly after I met Clay, I probably met you. And you guys have been part of, I mean, this isn't info commercial, whatever you call those things, infomercial. That's what they're looking for Ecclesia. But what's been your guys' connection and reason you stayed connected in the Ecclesia? Like, how is... I'm always interested to hear that journey, because being part of the early parts of it, like, and you guys are really, I mean, I don't know if we have founding churches, but you're one of the original Ecclesia churches from what I remember. What's that journey been like for you guys?
Okay, so when I moved to Maryland, Bruce Hoppler was my coach. He was the guy that really helped me think through a lot of this stuff, and he was very encouraging and like, yeah, these ideas can work, right? So, you know, Bruce was first really connecting with the people that kind of ended up becoming Ecclesia, you know, and he just totally like let me tag along with him, you know.
Bruce is nice like that.
He's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of our into Ecclesia, the real, and it was really cool because at the time we were a part of the Baptist Convention of Maryland, Delaware, but there was like some, you know, there were some frustrations going on between existing churches and some of the church planning churches, and we just didn't see where we had a place anymore. And so we were just trying to figure out, like, okay, what is it, you know, just to be a church all out here by yourself, Seth, feels like you can really get into some trouble without having accountability of some other churches to bounce stuff off of, you know. And so connecting with the pastors at, and, you know, just leaders or whatever at Ecclesia, it was nice to be able to talk to people who were thinking, you know, just thinking about faith and how to apply that faith within their churches. And, I mean, you could say some things that were like, well, I don't know, is that heretical or not? I don't even know. Oh, yeah, definitely. Don't say that. You know, like you know, you could bring stuff up, and it was just totally enjoyable to think through ideas and to come to a more, I don't know, a more profitable view of church instead of just like, oh yeah, this is the way things have always been. Like, just not about an organization. It was about relationships, and that totally fits our church. So that's what attracted us to, that's how we got connected with Ecclesia.
Nice. And, you know, go ahead, John. Are you going to say something, John?
No, I think that was Leslie.
Oh, Leslie, go.
Well, I was also going to say that you guys were cool with Leslie coming, which I never was sure with the whole Baptist thing.
Well, I mean, I was wondering how much, I know when we were talking early, I mean, this is probably 4 or 5 years ago, that was one of the things, like, you know, what are we going to call Leslie in this community? Because we can't call her pastor. And so it was kind of this awkward, like, language game for a little bit. Was that because of the Baptist convention, or was that because of your local community and the journey you guys were on locally?
It was all about locally.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
There was no way that whatever organization we were part of was going to dictate that. But,
okay.
But yeah, at the time, there were different people that came from a lot of different backgrounds. And so the idea of a woman pastor was like very new to a lot of them. And they kind of saw that as anti-biblical. But I think all that was kind of wrapped up in some assumptions about leadership in general, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever, it's Horizon almost steps out of those conversations. We don't practice any type of leadership that fits any of that model. So none of that really applies to us. We're not really interested in authority the way that those conversations usually take place.
Good.
No, I think you were going to track that question a little more. So go for it.
No, you track it, John. You go.
Well, I just was going to ask, is there ever a time where you feel you need to exercise authority?
I mean, for us, authority always happens relationally. Yeah, I mean, you have relationships with people. There are people who come to Horizon, show up on Sunday morning, and leave. We have no authority in their lives. We have no relationship with them.
Yeah.
As we build relationships, there's a mutual authority that takes place as we're following Christ together. We're seeing things in each other's lives that are healthy or unhealthy, and it's important to speak up about them, you know? And so, I mean, we truly believe that the authority comes from the Spirit. The direction comes from the Spirit of God, and that we are observant about who is following the Spirit, and we tend to trust those people to have the most authority, you know? So it's kind of like that, I guess.
Sure.
It's just not, it's not positional, it's relational.
Right.
And I know that totally sounds like ridiculous, but we're a small church and we always see ourselves being a small church. We're going to multiply if we get larger like we did before. And as long as we stay small, we think that that structure of relationship is superior to a structure of a position at, you know, say at about 100 and fewer size church.
Yeah, the larger you get, the more you do have to have structures in place to just to be able to manage things. I had a thought and I lost it. Shoot. I don't know. Sorry.
I'm sure it was amazing.
I'm sure it was.
Lost forever.
Well, I mean, Clay's been talking so much, he's not giving you any time, so
I'm just like, shut up, man.
Root out the conflict.
Yeah, I'm just trying to stir some up and see how you guys manage it on the fly, you know what I mean? Awesome. So, you know, the typical, I'm not sure how, I don't want to assume reading fits into your week or what's been some influential, like external resources for you guys, whether it's books or thoughts or, you know, besides John and I, who's influenced you guys a lot. Or lately,
That guy Hegi on TV, dude, he is awesome.
Who's that?
Am I getting his name right? Hegi.
Hegi. The guy. Hegi. Like, oh yeah,
he'll send you some like holy bread or something.
I think he's on the board of Ecclesia, so that's good.
I love that guy.
Yeah, love that guy.
Who else is influential? I mean, this is why I talk so much. I look at her and say go, and then I have to go. Gosh, and then I look like a turd because I talk.
No one can have, we can't have dead silence on this. It's,
I know,
it kills
right?
time. It kills us.
So, okay. So Story of Christian Theology with Olson, big deal, was a big deal for us at the start. Our leaders, like, all have a copy of that. Anything by Foster and Willard and those guys are way too Grins. Influential. Yeah. Stanley Grins, N.T. Wright. Now, with a lot of people in our church, they're big fans of like Blue Light Jazz guy.
Yeah.
Big Don Miller.
Miller, right.
Yeah.
And a lot of those guys. And I like them, but I kind of feel like those guys have fleshed out what Dallas Willard has been talking about in their own context. And I don't want to be too influenced by what those guys have fleshed out. Does that make sense? Like, I think that the way things get fleshed out here are going to get look different than the way they get fleshed out other places. And mm-hmm. I like reading those stories and I like, you know, just hearing about them, but they aren't quite as influential to me as like the Celtic Way of Evangelism. That's another one that was a big deal for us early on and still remains influential. Things like that, that kind of deal with ideas, you know, and then we kind of bat those ideas around and then figure out how to apply those ideas here. Yeah. So,
nice. Well, I think that's one of the dangerous things about the internet age where we do podcasts like this is we look at the what's and the how's that other people are doing.
Yeah.
And we avoid asking the why questions, and the why questions should shape the what's and the how's in each individual context.
Absolutely.
Yep.
No doubt. And those are the books that I think we enjoy the most because they get us talking and thinking, they enable us to be creative instead of just telling us, you know, giving us the end results. So
nice. Well, I mean, I think we can kind of wrap things up. I was going to ask you if you guys are on Twitter or anything like that, but since we had to borrow our Skype account, probably not.
We do not do social media.
I love that we had to borrow a Skype account.
Some relationships.
If I can't look you in the face and talk to you, I feel really weird about like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, just like that. It's kind of awkward.
Email and texting is as technology or technologically advanced as we get.
Nice. Awesome. Well, I mean, if anybody were to want to check you guys out, Thirsty Jesus is your website.
That is our website, yeah.
ThirstyJesus.com.
.com.
Yes, Thrifty. THRI.
No.
Right? That's the one?
ThriftyJesus.com. And we'll... Yeah, anything else to close up? You want to say, John, anything else?
No.
All right.
I just want to say that I love you, and being able to look at your faces while I did this made it worthwhile completely. And awesome. I think if I can, I'm just going to leave your pictures up here a little while after we're done.
You can just, that'll... you know, screenshot that and just put that as your desktop background. And you can look at us all you want.
Carry them around in my wallet like the olden days.
That's right.
Yeah.
When it says print screen, that's not what it means. Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you guys. I guess it'd be in March.
Yeah.
Probably be the next time. So, been great talking. I, you know, as we were getting ready to talk to you guys, I was like, man, these are, I don't talk to these guys enough. I only see them once a year, but it's always good. So, great to talk to you guys mid-year in a sense. So,
yep.
Awesome.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing your story. Loved hearing it.
Yep.
Cool, man.
All right. You guys take care.
Blessings.
Bye-bye.